All right, and welcome to another episode of Medical Minds Conversations with Guthrie Experts. I'm Steve Osterhaus, and joining me, as always, is co-host Dr. Corinne Johnston, who is a family medicine physician with Guthrie, as well as the system's chief patient experience officer. Dr. Johnston, how are you?
I'm doing well, Steve. A little bit of snow this morning, but we all made it to work, so that's a good thing.
Yes, our region in northern Pennsylvania and upstate New York saw a little bit of snow yesterday and last night. I was in New York City, coming home from New York City. So it was, I drove through some of that snow and took it a little bit easier than I normally would. But my wife and daughter and I were in New York City to pick up our son, who spent a semester overseas in London. So it was nice to get him back, picked him up at the airport. So.
Oh, I bet it was. Big hugs.
Big hugs. You know, we got an embarrassing Facebook video clip, you know, the whole deal.
Oh, good. So, good.
But it was good. But it's the reason why I was reminded of today's word of the day. And that is, and I'm going to try to get this right, borborygmi. Borborygmi.
Yes. Very good, Steve. Borborygmi. Yeah. Okay. If you can say it, that's half the battle. You sound like the expert.
Yeah. Well, I'm clearly not the expert, but no, I'm happy I was able to say it. And I brought it up because being in New York City, you would think this would never be an issue. And I'll let you more explain what it is and what it means. Yeah. But you wouldn't think this would be an issue because there is food everywhere you walk. But a couple of weeks before Christmas, it is just chaos. And you're just trying to get from place to place and get in different lines. And you just don't have any time to eat at all.
So too much. Well, people very commonly come in and say I think we often sometimes think something's wrong. I can hear my stomach. It's rumbling. It's grumbling. People in the room can hear it. Sometimes we're hungry, some that it's not. So those noises are nothing to be concerned with. And the big fancy word for them is the borborygmi. So, our gut is kind of like, I like to tell patients, it's constantly moving. It's like an anaconda when you watch those videos and they swallow the rat and you can kind of see it moving. Our gut's doing that. So it's going to make some noises. And if you hear them, you can certainly apologize if you think it's concerning to anyone in the room, but it happens to all of us, probably especially when you're in New York City and the queues are 20 people deep to get some food.
Yeah, yes, exactly. And there is food everywhere, but then you're thinking, okay, I can get a soft pretzel, but do I really want to go with the hot dog? Do I want to go inside and get something else? You know, too many options maybe, and just too much to do. So,
but, analysis paralysis, right? Yes, there always might be a better option.
Yes, 100%. So excited about today, right? We're going to be talking something I think we would all say is a perception. When anybody goes to an ED, doesn't matter which hospital it is across the country.
Yeah.
The assumption is I'm waiting too long or I want to be seen. And I think we can all say that we all think that way, regardless of which hospital we live near or go to. So we're trying to make it a little better for everyone by discussing kind of when to go where for which symptoms, right?
Yeah. So that's a common question, right? And we know that prior to the pandemic, we had overflow of patients in our emergency rooms nationally. And that's continued through COVID and post-COVID. Far more patients than there are providers and staff in those emergency rooms. So when can we use those other things? You know, the walk-in clinics, the acute care clinics, and when do I have to go to the emergency room? When's it's absolutely necessary?
And then when can they go see people like you, right?
Yeah.
You're a family medicine physician. Sometimes you don't have to go to a specialized facility.
Yeah, that's a great point, Steve. So your ability to get in with your family physician, and I know there are health systems that have tried to make it easier across the nation for us to say, oh, I called in today, you know, you're sick, let's get you in with your PCP or someone within our office that kind of shares that team-based approach to your healthcare. So a lot of options there as well to keep you out of that emergency room and out of that 4 or 5, 6 hour wait.
All right. We'd like to welcome our guest now, Wendy Kolajajic. And Wendy is the Director of Critical Care Services at our Guthrie Hospital in Cortland. And in charge of critical care, she oversees both of our emergency department and our ICU. And one important thing to keep in mind when we refer to it as an emergency department or ED, most people listening or watching are probably more familiar with the term ER, but they're both the same thing. And I think it's great, personally, from my point of view, having both Wendy and Dr. Johnson on at the same time, because it plays really well into our topic, which is, if I'm sick or I'm injured, do I go to the ED? Do I go to walk-in, urgent, immediate care, whatever you want to call it? Or do I go to a primary care physician like Dr. Johnston? So they can really speak to it from both ends there. So I guess I want to start by welcoming Wendy. Hello, how are you today?
Good, thank you. I'm really excited to be here with you both today. So thank you for having me.
And the question a lot of people think of, and it's regardless of where they live, I think everyone will say, oh, when I go to the emergency department or the emergency room, the wait is so long. And it doesn't matter where you live. Your personal hospital, you'll always kind of feel that way. So is there some truth to that, or is it really perception over reality?
I honestly believe that it could be a little bit of both, depending on which hospital situation is in your community, right? We're very lucky here in Cortland. We're a small community hospital. We're basically a sole community hospital, meaning we're the only one in our county. We really look at our wait times right from somebody walking in the door, right through the time that it takes them to be able to leave the ED or in some cases having to be admitted to the hospital. So I think there's a perception of every, if you're in pain or you're having an emergency situation, time feels like it can go on forever, right? 5 minutes can feel like 50 minutes. So, you know, right, typically, regardless of what emergency room you're going, you're going to walk in, be greeted by some sort of registration person who's going to get your immediate information. The triage nurse or a nurse first, or even sometimes a PIP provider, which is a doctor or a mid-level, might be right at those windows helping the check-in process so that they actually are getting a kind of a feel for what's going on. And then they're doing that. So triaging is basically the ability to see how sick somebody is and how fast they need to be seen. So if someone's coming in with something less severe, and say we have two patients coming in right together, and patient A comes in and they have a cough and a sore throat, and they've had a fever, and they felt really bad for, say, 4 or 5 days. And right behind them, the next person that's checking in is having chest pain that just came on, and they're having issues with speaking and breathing. That triage nurse, even if patient B came after patient A, is immediately going to say that person warrants care faster because they're more acutely ill. So that person is going to get pulled back quicker. So with that being said, though, patient A is going to feel like, well, now I'm waiting, right? And it might be that that triage nurse comes for them 20 minutes later because they have to get that first person settled. Or maybe there's times where we in the ED might have multiple critical patients coming in, or the ambulance in the back people can't see. So you might be having really, really critical people coming in. So time is definitely a perception of what's going on in the whole department. But most hospitals, I believe, across the country have some sort of metrics you can look at or see where we do try to get people at least seen by a triage nurse within the first 10 minutes that they're walking in the door. And I think that's kind of a governmental standard where you're trying to beat that clock. Same thing with door to doc. We want to be able to get you to a doctor within 30 minutes. So there's that time clock can definitely feel longer. In some bigger city hospitals, I have seen the wait time of that triage to doctor to getting into a room extend many, many more hours than what we typically see within our system. But again, that is accounting for they're getting multiple ambulances, they're getting multiple people coming in that front door that are sick. And so that wait time for those less critical patients is definitely extended.
I looked up a statistic before we started to throw around, and the median ED visit in the nation is about 2 hours and 40 minutes. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, thinking of the person who maybe is utilizing the emergency room where they could come to their primary care office, and they might be here for 40 minutes if the doc is running behind, you know, so just a long visit for everyone involved, right? Not just for the patients, but also for the care providers that are in the emergency room trying to deal with all of these, the spectrum of presentations.
Absolutely. Totally agree.
Yeah. Yeah. We see a neat thing in the patient. Sorry, Steve. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, we see a neat thing in the patient experience world. So that's right, my other hat, where if we're too fast in the emergency room, the patients feel like we didn't take good care of them because they don't think that they waited enough. But then if we go past 4 hours, they waited too long. So it's an interesting, humans are interesting, where they see that wait time aligning with getting the care they think they need.
Absolutely. And I think the other new thing is that most emergency rooms across the nation, and that we've been instilling here, is having providers up at the front of the house. So in that triage or the registration area space. So they're actually looking at people, and those less critical patients are actually getting orders and being seen from the waiting room. So, and it's interesting because I think some people, like you said, Dr. Johnston, that Press Ganey can come back like, well, I never went into a room. I was only treated from the waiting room. But they get in and get done faster because the rooms are being taken by the critical patients. But yet we can come in and do an x-ray and some lab work and get everything taken care of. So you may never see the back door of the waiting room and be able to be in the comfy back, I use comfy as the quote unquote comfortable rooms. But again, we're seeing that more and more so that, again, that we can get our patients through the process when we have limited space or beds in the back and trying to, again, that triaging of those patients. So, and I'm very much into the patient satisfaction. I will read it. And so just like she said, some people will be like, I got in and out in an hour, but I was never in the back. Or I waited 2 hours and I got in the back and then I waited another 2 hours. So it is it's a fine balance of where people feel just right.
So they almost feel like if it was too fast, they must not have gotten the care that they thought they needed, even though maybe it just, they were just really good at triaging the situation and taking care of you up front and getting you on your way. So you can probably be in a much happier spot, because no one really wants to be in a hospital. It's the best of the best, but nobody really wants to spend time there.
Agreed.
So I guess that brings into play some of the reason that some emergency departments can be so busy is because people come to the emergency department who often don't need to come to the emergency department because they just assume, and, you know, I've probably done the same thing in my life, either as a parent or when I was younger, that you just don't need to be there. So it's probably a larger question than we can answer in the time we have, but where is the line drawn? You know, are there examples? Are there things that maybe you see a lot of, Wendy, that come in terms of illness and you're just like, no, you really didn't need to come see us. We're happy to help you, but you could have, gone to an urgent care or a doctor's office.
Yeah, I think this is the perfect time of year to have this conversation together, because honestly, cold and flu season is probably the time where we see a lot of cases where, in COVID, right? So somebody comes in and says, oh, I need a COVID test. In this day and age, right? Like back in the beginning, totally understand where people were coming. But now for a COVID swab, right? You could easily go to your primary care, or you can go to a walk-in clinic, or really just getting a test from the pharmacy, right? I think some people still feel like, oh, well, I still have to have that confirmation. So we do see COVID testing, or just that natural cold and flu. Like I use that example of that patient A coming in. I've got I've had a cough and I've got a fever. Maybe my kid was sick with the flu last week and they're coming in and it's like to get that confirmation test. And again, those panels, those respiratory panels, are definitely something that I think from family medicine and those walk-in clinics would be a much faster process to even be seen through that versus an ER visit for that. Dr. Johnson, would you agree?
Yeah, you know, I think the step one, if you're not having crushing chest pain, if you're not showing symptoms of BFAST, of the stroke, which we talked about in our previous podcasts, you know, if you can breathe, you know, call your primary care office. There's always a provider on call in primary care offices. So even if it's off hours, you know, can I wait to be seen for this? Let them help you, right? Because you're really not going to expedite your care, and let the people that know you take care of you, or kind of I think with the doctor shortage that we've seen nationally, right, provider shortage, what we're seeing are more of these acute care clinics or walk-in clinics pop up, but they exist to take that overflow, right? So the person who has crushing chest pain gets care in the timely manner that they need in the emergency department. So I completely agree, Wendy. I think there's something culturally in the United States that's driving this, like, needing access right now. But the best thing we can do is, you know, start with your primary care and see if they can see you or if they have a recommendation.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, even when you look at some of the people come in with sprains, I mean, this is winter, right? So people might have a fall and they twist their ankle, or they, you know, they might have hurt their wrist. A lot of walk-in clinics now accommodate and have x-ray and those types of services right there, so that they don't have to, it might be you're in pain, but you can get in quicker by getting to an urgent or a walk-in clinic that has those services versus coming in and being behind 10 patients that are much more acutely ill, and you're going to be out of pain and much faster if you're going to one of those other areas, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it really does help everyone involved, right? The people who need to be seen first can then be seen first and make sure they get that care right away. And you, if you don't have as bad of an issue, we'll say, can also be seen a lot quicker if you go to a different location. You know, Dr. Johnson, you mentioned the on-call doctor at the primary care offices. Yeah. It brings to mind when my kids were younger, right? And the pediatrician's office. Lifesavers.
Yeah.
Just call them up and a nurse or a doctor, somebody would call you back and be able to be like, no, you're okay. Or you can come in and see us tomorrow. And it just put your mind at ease. Say, okay, well, it's not serious enough. They don't say I have to go to the emergency room and they're the experts. So if they say I don't need to come, then I should be good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they can expedite you getting your care the next day, right, from your medical team. So I think that speaks a lot. It's ironic, though, a lot of the calls that I get, you know, are really sick people that are asking me, should I go? Where I wish it was the other way around, right? I was getting the not as sick people. And I'm saying, you know, I think this is something we can manage at home and get you in the office.
Mm-hmm. And I think people, it's funny, as you said, mentioned, Steve, people are wanting instant, like almost that instant care, thinking, oh, well, the ER is always open, it's 24/7, you know, instead of waiting. I think that now with telehealth is great too. I think that that's another great option. I've got to utilize that myself. Like, I ended up having like conjunctivitis and I woke up and it was a Sunday and I'm like, I don't want to go anywhere else. In my pajamas, I was able to do a televisit. The provider looked at my eye with my phone and she's like, yep, that's what you got. And she wrote me a script. And, you know, same thing with even some of these sore throats and colds and coughs, they can do an assessment and then they can tell you. Because my son, you know, a good, great example, my son, a couple weeks ago, he had a really bad sore throat and his friend, we had hand, foot, mouth. So we're like, oh, well, and he had a little blister. So we did the telehealth call because I said before, I take him anywhere, let's find out. And she's like, let's get him in for a strep. But they immediately directed me to their walk-in clinic so that I could just do that and be able to go quickly in. He got his strep test. He got confirmation and a few days off from school. So, but again, it was so easy. I think, you know, where again, if you don't have to like go into an area that can be really congested, most ERs across the country, even with those wait times, those waiting rooms are filled with people that are sick. And, you know, I'd rather be able to stay in my home if possible, or a doctor's office where you can just get in and get out.
And yeah. for those listening or watching, conjunctivitis, we always like to call out words of the day. I know that one's really kind of more commonplace, but that's essentially pink eye, correct?
Pink eye, correct.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we talked about not needing to come to the ED, but that's not to say that you can't come to the ED. You know, we want to make it very clear that no ED anywhere in the country will turn you away, you know, so that
Absolutely not. You
100%, if you feel the need that you need to come to the ED, mm-hmm. Whether it's going with or against the advice of an expert, you have every right to do that. And you, of course, will be mm-hmm. treated. What are some of, you talked about sprains, which makes a lot of sense this time of year. And you talked about, you know, cold and flu, but I want to take a step back to when you were referencing COVID. How much of an impact did COVID have on this whole experience in terms of an emergency department? And again, maybe a larger question than we can answer in this short period of time, because COVID impacted the medical field like nothing has. But talk about that and the busyness of emergency departments.
Yeah, I would say that I think that was a game changer, and the fact that here you have a disease that presents a lot like cold and flu, right? So, and within the top time of the pandemic was making some people really, really sick. So I think, and then a lot of employers were looking to have certain people COVID tested at a regular basis, or if you had COVID, you had to have an official, you know, you had to have an official test before they could go back to work. So I feel like it definitely, in my opinion, right, this is just my opinion alone, I feel like we saw a lot of people who probably maybe wouldn't have come for like a cold coming in because they needed to confirm that it's not COVID. And I think we're still seeing some of that, and some employers are still requiring testing, or people get nervous, right? Or they maybe had a loved one that was affected by COVID before, or that had maybe a bad outcome. Because we're definitely seeing now, you know, this year, we're seeing less and less COVID admissions. So people are not sick enough that they're actually able to come in, get tested, be sent home. There's a lot of great alternative therapies now, or you can call your primary care. I'll let Dr. Yep. Johnson talk to that, so that you can mm-hmm. be treated and not have to come into the ER to get that test verification.
Yeah. I mean, and even the ability to buy over the counter now, right? I have at home, I have a RSV, flu, and COVID swabs. So when my kids present with some things, you know, and I know you may say that's easy, Dr. Johnston, you're a doctor, right? But if they're eating, drinking, smiling, and their fever comes down with Motrin, you know, I can swab them and know if I need to be socially responsible and keep them home, or if I can, you know, let them go to school because it looks like they have a run-of-the-mill virus that you know, everyone in their class has had. So I think we can do that for adults as well. And then if they are positive, the way I run my practice is if they've had a swab and they're flu positive, or they're, you know, I'll send in the Tamiflu if they qualify. I think patients think sometimes too, if I go to the emergency room, I'll get it faster, or I'll get the Tamiflu, or I'll get the COVID treatment. But I don't know that that's true, right? And I think they can get that right from their primary care doctor's office.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that it just gets you into a place 24/7, because sometimes we'll see people come in the middle of the night. Well, my doctor's mm-hmm. office doesn't open. But again, they're fitting those same things that Dr. Johnson said. You know, their breathing is good, their fever's coming down, you know, just rest and have that ability to come go see your doctor later is always a better choice than waking up in the middle of the night, getting into your car, coming in when you're going to have to wait for the pharmacy to open for most of the medications as well.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say, you bring up, you know, everyone can get a test now for COVID tests in any pharmacy, and it just brings to mind back when we were having our first child and the pregnancy test, which I know it's not the same thing, but I'm pretty sure we bought way more pregnancy tests than we needed to. Are we sure? Are we really sure? You know, and then obviously we go in and have the official doctor's appointment, but waste a lot of money on those extra tests, but it's just, but you know, people just need to feel that, well, this, the expert did it. Not, I didn't, you know, just use the over the counter, but yes.
Steve, you are not alone. Very commonly, first pregnancies especially, patient had 18 positive pregnancy tests at home, wonders if they're pregnant. You know, that's what's in for my nurse. So
I might not have been the one that says how many tests I did. So they went on my chart and would just say positive pregnancy tests.
Another big word that people hear more and more about, and sometimes they see it reported on the news that they're, you know, Hospital X is on diversion, which can freak people out because they get the feeling that nobody's allowed to go to that hospital at all. And they're on diversion or they're overwhelmed. What's going on? And I think what a lot of people don't understand, and I only say this now because I work in the healthcare field, it's fairly, I don't want to say common because it's not like our hospitals are on diversion on a regular basis. They're not. But during times like COVID, would it be accurate to say that within certain cities where there are multiple hospitals, they would all almost kind of go on rotation, right? One would be on diversion while the other two or three were taking patients and they were working with one another. So it's not like one is like too busy and all the others can come take our patients. Wendy, could you talk a little bit more about diversion and what it really means?
Yeah, absolutely. So diversion is a term that we use when a hospital is really maxed out its capacity. So in my ER, I'll use mine as an example, we have 14 beds, right? We see about 80 to 100 patients a day in my 14 beds, which is a lot of people for a little beds. If we end up, so during COVID, when we were at the height of this, and we probably were on diversion more than at that time, there was a limited capacity on the medical floors, right? There was only so many beds. So even if they could take 12 patients on each of my medical floors and 10, you know, maybe 10 ICU patients on our ICU floor, let's say all of those beds are filled. And then my 14 beds are filled with border patients. So a border patient is somebody who's admitted that needs to be being treated on a medical floor or the ICU floor, but we have no physical beds upstairs left because of whether it's staffing or just physical space of your hospital. So at a certain point, each state looks at it a little bit differently. So in here in New York State, they have criteria before you go on diversion. You have to have a minimum of 10 inpatient borders. You have to report off the criticality of those patients. So do you have, they ask how many ICU patients you have. They will ask how many mental health borders you potentially have. They will ask you how many waiting room patients are waiting in the waiting room to come back and how many hours they've been waiting in the room. So usually it's 8 borders waiting for 2 hours plus the, you know, the 10 borders in the back. So then we start looking at, like, we have no more patient movement. So diversion is only for ambulances because we're saying that our hospital's at a capacity that if a critical, like we talked about, that critical trauma patient rolls through our doors, we don't have the resources or the physical place for them to be treated. So we're basically asking EMS to say, please be mindful, right? This is the situation our hospital is under. And we will call all of the EMS around us and state we're on diversion. So that way they look for other hospitals that are open that can take care of those trauma or high acuity patients. So like you said before, some of the cities across the country, maybe big cities, they had multiple hospitals. The state would require that one of them had to not be on diversion, right? So that they would take turns and rotate through at those high need times. However, what it doesn't stop is our doors are always open, right? Anybody can walk in our door at any time, whether we're on diversion or not, and they will be treated. So it does not stop, it doesn't close the door. So diversion is EMS diversion. And even then, if a patient states that they demand that they go to a hospital that's on diversion, that hospital will take them. So again, it's never turning any patient away. It is more for that mindfulness. And even it states in the rules and regulations is if we have a patient who is doing poorly and the closest hospital is on diversion, they still go to that hospital to get stabilized before they transfer them onto a larger hospital that's not. So basically, it's more of a mindfulness so that our EMS workers know that we are at the max capacity. And so that they work with us usually as a team to know, like, okay, this is where we're at. But if they call, they talk to the doctor and say, I've got X, Y, and Z. We need to be there. They absolutely take them. So it's never, you know, I don't want people to ever synonymously think that diversion is closed, because it's never. We're never closed. We're doing an ER renovation and I'm not closed. So or on diversion.
It's, yeah. It's usually just two, right, Wendy, for like small periods of time. Like hospitals aren't on diversion for days and days generally. It's might be a couple hours.
Yeah. So New York State requires us to look at every four. We have to call back and give an update. So, and then at that point, we're trying to, you know, hospitals are looking at their surge plans. They're looking at where else they can help to offload patients so that we can quickly come off of that, because we want to make sure that we can keep our patients in your communities. So.
So since I'm the person who's non-clinical in this, I was wondering, Wendy or Dr. Johnston, if either of you wanted to throw out, you know, a possible symptom or injury or illness to me and see if I can guess which location, ED, walk-in, or primary care I should go if that issue arises.
Steve, before you start, I'm going to give you the advice that the dean of my medical school gave us on day one for our entering class. He said, if you don't know the answer, always say it depends and you'll always be right. So if you're confused or not sure, just say it depends.
Excellent. Good to know. I like being able to cheat in advance of the test.
All right. I will throw out your first scenario.
Okay.
So you are an avid hiker and you get in from hiking.
Well, we already know that's not going to happen. So, so it's probably going to be a serious injury. I better go straight to the ED.
Right. So you don't fall down, but all of a sudden, 3 days later, you're home and you realize that you have a tick or two that are on your back that you had no knowledge that they were there. And where would you go for that?
Honestly, I think I'm probably, assuming I can get the ticks out, then I would probably call my primary care doctor to see if they think it's serious enough for me to go in.
Good answer.
Am I right?
Good answer. All right. What if you can't get the ticks out?
If I can't get the ticks out?
Good answer.
I like that one too. Yes.
That's tricky.
But they've been there for 3 days and you feel fine.
Well, then I'm going to start to get nervous. So I'm probably going to be that person who's like, okay, I can't get them out. Yes, I feel fine, but they've been in me for three days and I've heard so much about Lyme disease and the negative impact. So I might go to the emergency department at that point. Huh. Well, it depends. That's not true. If it's until like 8 o'clock at night, I might consider a walk-in care or urgent care.
I think that's a good answer. Wendy, yes. Would you agree?
I would totally agree with that. I was going to say, because the interesting part about ticks that most people don't realize is that if the body can come out and the head remains, that it's still okay. If you start showing other symptoms, which I'm sure Dr. Johnston can explain more of Lyme disease, again, that would probably be something that you still would want to be working with your primary care provider to look at those. But I think that's why we see an overwhelming amount of tick bites in the EDs, because people are, just as you said, you hesitated, right? You said, I don't know, like that makes me a little bit nervous, is the fact that people think, oh my gosh, I have a tick, what do I do, right? And instead of just get it out, if it's red and swollen, right, get some ice on it, talk to your primary care, go to a walk-in clinic, because they would still be able to advise you better, even if it becomes Lyme disease, that's a long-term issue.
I work I work with a mentor who always says it's the tick you don't see that you worry about, right? Because right. that's when they really, when they detach is when there's the transmission that can occur. So I always say if you saw them, that's good. Then we have an idea that maybe we need to keep our eyes peeled for symptoms. But I understand. I think that's what people actually, I don't know if it's Lyme they're worried about or the fact that they have an insect on them, right, Steve? That's what you said.
Yeah, that's true. That's it would kind of freak me out.
Yeah. I worked a lot of walk-in for my clinic when I very first started. I didn't have a large patient panel. And I do remember I had one young lady who came in who said, I think I have a bug in my ear. I was camping. I felt it fly in. And she indeed did. And she came to our walk-in. We weren't able to get it, but we were able to arrange same-day follow-up with a specialist, ear, nose, and throat, who could go in and get it with suction, where we don't have that option. So I could see her feeling, you know, hearing the insect in her ear and knowing it was in there was distressing.
Well, you know, it's interesting too, right? Because if you think about it from, we have a dog, and you know, if our dog were to have a tick bite or have a tick in them, we love our dog, but the first thing I wouldn't do was go to the vet hospital or the overnight hospital. I would just reach out to the vet and ask them what to do. So I guess it's kind of similar in this case.
Yeah. All right, Steve, I've got a good one for you because I think this is where people waffle the most, right? So your kiddo, who's maybe 4 or 5, maybe 3, has a fever, 103. They're smiling. They're drinking. They don't really want to eat. You know, maybe their throat hurts. They're going to the bathroom still, you know, maybe having wet diapers if they're still in diapers. What are you going to do with that one? Because that's when you know, they're whimpery, they're clingy, they don't want to come off of you. What do you think about that one?
103 makes me a little nervous. That number seems pretty high. I'd maybe see if I can give them some Motrin. And if the fever doesn't come down at all, and depending on the time of night, if the urgent care is closed. I did mention earlier, though, I would call the pediatrician and have the on-call nurse or doctor give us a call back and see what they think. But if for whatever reason I couldn't get a hold of them, which they've never not called back, so I'm sure I could. But if I couldn't, maybe I'd go to the hospital just because 103 seems pretty high.
Yeah. Toddlers and kiddos can mount a pretty high fever, especially virally. And so it can be a concerning thing as a parent. I think you hit the nail on the head there. Have you given them anything? Right. And I worked with an old school pediatrician who used to say the first thing they taught us, Corinne, if that kiddo is smiling, they're fine. And I still use that all the time when I see sick pediatrics in my clinic, in my office. You know, if they're interacting with me, they're smiling, right? I can feel better about that situation. But I think that's the key point, right? Who's your provider, who you know? And that's where primary care is so important, that knows you and knows your child and can kind of give you that feedback.
Yeah, absolutely.
And keeping up with that primary care too, you know, I know with pediatricians, you have your annuals and shots and things like that. But as you get older, that, you know, kind of stops, you know, and I'm probably not the best example of this because I don't go on a regular basis to my primary care doctor, but you know, how important it is to build that relationship so you can feel comfortable with that individual and be like, okay, well, Dr. X says yes or no, I'm good to go.
Yeah.
All right. I have another one for you, Steve. So you're home and wrapping your Christmas presents and the scissors slip out of your hand and you slice your hand or finger and it might need stitches. You're bleeding pretty heavy, but you might need some stitches. Where would you go?
Am I by myself? Can I ask my wife, you know, to be the phone a friend, my lifeline? She can tell me whether it's bad or good.
You could have a wife there to look at your finger first.
Well, she would probably then just tell me, you're fine, suck it up. We'll just, you know, we'll put a band-aid on it. If it starts to get worse, it doesn't stop, then we'll, you know, probably go to urgent care before the ED is what I would say. I will, not to bring this back to me, but somehow in my world, it always comes back to Steve. But when I was younger, riding my bike with my best friend, we were riding bikes, and you know those like no parking signs that are up against curbs, things like that. Well, my pinky was off my handlebar, and I went right into one of the sides of those. And sorry, it's a little gross, but you know, it was halfway still on and halfway off. And it didn't hurt as much as there was so much blood. I was like, I think this is bad. You know, we were out at outside a mall. We had to go in there. Whole ambulance came. You know, it was a whole thing. But yeah, so blood usually makes me think a little bit differently. But I would probably go to urgent care if it didn't stop bleeding.
Yeah, good answer. I was going to say, in the scenario you just talked about with your pinky was kind of half off, half on. That would be the emergency room. That would be the call to make.
deformity equals ER. Yes. That, I think, is
loss
fair.
Loss of limb.
Yeah, I guess near that one's loss. Kind of obvious. It was saved. It was saved. It was good. Well, you know, Wendy, this has been great. Is there anything else you wanted to add at all about, you know, if you know, people just questioning, should they go, shouldn't, you know, just overall anxiety about the ED? Do you ever find people who don't go, or maybe that Dr. Johnson, this is a question for you, who don't go because they have a fear of it, but should?
Yeah, I'm sure, Wendy, it's very polarizing. So Wendy led when we were talking before we started filming or taping. She said about a gentleman who cut his arm off and came in with like, he drove himself in with his arm kind of like in a sling, but cut off. So, you know, it tends to be very polarizing. Yes, absolutely. And I think we would all agree. And Steve, you really, you know, hit the nail on the head here. None of us are sitting here to say, don't go to the emergency room, right? There has to be a certain use of your gut. But if you have a question, you have resources, right? And if you're saying, I probably don't have to go, then you probably don't. And you can be seen in a walk-in or call your primary care office to be seen.
Yeah, but I think too, if it's the middle of the night or after, all of those options might not be available and you're scared for whatever is going on with you, absolutely come in, right? Yeah. We want to make sure that we can put your mind at ease and we do always talk about the fact when patients, going back to patient satisfaction for a minute, when people are like, you're not paying enough attention to me, we said that's actually in the ER a good thing, because that means if all my resources are in one room, you don't want to be in that room, right? You want to be the person who is got to wait a little bit. But truly we're here for everybody, no matter what. So
yeah. And make that appointment after that ER visit to follow up with the primary care doc, because they're always going to tell you that. And it's so true, because the emergency room has deemed you okay for discharge. You're not actively dying right then. You don't have to be admitted. But that doesn't mean that there's more that we need to do later on to hopefully keep you out of the emergency room.
Correct. Yeah, I imagine that probably happens a lot, right? People don't take the next steps and then they end up back in the emergency room.
Back in the ER.
Correct. Yep. And as I say, and I think Dr. Johnson, I speak for a lot of doctor's offices, have those emergency room visit slots open. So sometimes, obviously, for a regular visit, it might be more hard, but those emergent visits, every doctor's office has the ability to.
Yep, absolutely. They're saved in the schedules, and we watch metrics to make sure that we have enough of them for our patient volume. So absolutely, those are available. We just need to know you were there. I always tell my patients, I'm a great stalker. If it's in our health system, I can see that you went. But if you went to a different health system, I can't always tell that you were there.
All right. Excellent. Great advice from what I consider two guests today, even though one of you is a co-host, because, you know, you see it from both ends of the spectrum. So, Wendy, thank you so much for spending some time with us today.
Thank you. It was great. It was a lot of fun.
All right. That was a great conversation with Wendy. Dr. Johnson, I learned a lot, I know. You know, you knew it all already, but I learned a lot.
It's a lot of perspective, Steve. You know, it's easy to sit in my office and say, you know, go to the ER, don't go to the ER. But with Wendy, the people that are those boots on the ground, they work really hard to keep our communities healthy as well.
Yes, absolutely. You know, and this podcast is powered by Guthrie Engage. So if you want to learn more about In fact, you can go there and there's a graphic up there that has walk-in versus ED versus primary care to help you answer some of those questions if you may not know the answer and you're thinking about, should I go? Should I not go? Where should I go? That's up there. Lots of helpful tips that you maybe don't need to go see a doctor for, and they can just, offer you some great advice. Or if you want to listen or watch this podcast again, you can do that there too. And that is Guthrie.org/engage, and we're hoping that we can engage with you so that you can play an active role in your own life. Have a great day.
Great. Thanks for listening.